high school. And I watched your daughter run for Bryant Middle School, and I'm impressed with her running ability. And I just wanted to introduce myself because I'd like you to consider coming out for the cross country team, and then later in the spring, the track and field team. Our daughter was really excited, and she told us that her kids would definitely see me. About 4 years later, we got a knock on the door again, and it was Mr. Bridges, and he said, I've seen your son, Jared, once, and he's a very promising runner. And then Jared came to the door, and in pure Jared fashion, he said, no, I'm not interested, I'm playing soccer. That's my sport of choice. So Mr. Bridges said, well, see, because you don't have to try out for the soccer team, and you may not make it, and if you don't make it, which I'm sure you will, but if you don't make it, I'd love to have you come out for cross country. So sure enough, Jared tried out and made the soccer team. So Jared played that year, but then in the spring decided to go out for track, and he got to know Mr. Bridges really well. And this morning in class, Kevin mentioned that even though he never played or ran cross country or track, he played other sports, and he never had Mr. Bridges for a teacher at Dearborn High School. Kevin remembers having conversations with Mr. Bridges in the hallway, and I think he had quite an effect on Kevin. So, I did both Jared and Alyssa and all of these other teens and young adults. Why did Mr. Bridges make such an impression on them? Well, that's because he reflected a certain character. He had self-discipline, high morals, he knew who he was, and he had a stable and consistent emotional state. That is, until my daughter told me, one thing he did not like was a bunch of screechy girls. And apparently, when he was on the bus with the girls, they would get kind of carried away. My daughter was telling me about a birthday party that they actually threw on the bus as they were headed to a track meet. And Mr. Bridges got up and was not too happy. But this man had intentional integrity, which is the name of my sermon today. In Matthew 6:19, the disciple writes that we should not stockpile our treasures on earth because they'll fall apart, wear out, or lose their value to us. Later, Matthew writes in chapter 25:14-18, again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2 bags, and to another 1 bag, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more bags. So also, the one with the 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his money's nest, or his master's money. We know at the end of that story, the master becomes angry with the servant who stockpiled the money because it wasn't utilized in any way. It was hoarded and it did nothing to bless anyone. The next verse begins a journey for us talking about treasures in heaven that cannot be destroyed. Here is where our story moves away from stuff toward matters of character. Matters of character are the development of, one, a godly personality, two, a mind that can enjoy the great thoughts of God and its creation, and three, a heart that can transcend selfishness by loving. Leave it to Jesus to turn the tables. In a world that glorifies material wealth, here it is the Son of God telling us that it's not about stuff. It's about a heavenly treasure that cannot be taken from you. It's your character. Church, hear that again. It's your character. Your character is a treasure creation, and nothing nor anyone can steal it from it. I truly believe that is why Christians from developing countries are so excited about their faith. They have very little in a materialistic way, but instead place a high value on the transformation of their character to become more and more Christ-like. Let's reflect on Matthew 6:20. This verse tells us that we need to develop our Christ-like character. Luke 6:43-45 states, "No good tree bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. People do not pick figs from thorn bushes or grapes from briars. A good man brings good things out of the good, stored up in his heart, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of." Becoming like Christ enables us to go out into the world to love God, love others, and go make, baptize, and teach disciples. Matthew 6:21 can be summarized by words, "Your goals must be driven by what God values." In Romans 12:2, Paul wrote, "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." The core values that the Bible gives us helps us to discern God's will and place it above our own earthly will. In Matthew 6:22, our purpose and life is revealed. It's kind of like when I get up in the morning and I clean the lens of my glasses and then put them on. I can see clearly. John 13:13-17 states, "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." Here we have a great example of one of the four parts of character. That is a self-image of who God made us to be. We are to use our spiritual gifts to benefit others. Matthew 6:23 reminds us that if our purpose in life is unclear, or if we are doing things simply to bring ourselves glory, our character will be flawed. Philippians 2:3-4 states, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others." In other words, we are not to be like the Pharisees who loudly recited their prayers on street corners or pasted on sad faces when they were fasting, just to let everyone know how cool they really were. Matthew 6:24 ends with the idea that we belong to God and we are his stewards. We fool ourselves if we think that we can serve more than one master. Luke 12:16-21 records what Jesus said, and he told them this parable: "The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, 'What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops.' Then he said, 'This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, every night your life will be demanded from you. Then this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich toward God. We are not to store up what God has blessed us with, whether it is abundant wealth or a godly character. God wants us to share our stuff and ourselves with others. He wants us to develop
personality, allowing it to enjoy the great thoughts of God and His creation, and our heart that can transcend selfishness.